Can't get enough wrestling talk? Well, check out Ringside Rant with top guys RJ and Justin, the kings of ranting. The new shows drop each Friday morning at 9 Eastern, and it'll take you back to the good old days of pro wrestling, but also the not so good days. Ringside Rant is available on all podcast platforms, as well as full press coverage, Wrestling with Johnners Network, and the Shining Wizards Network. You can also follow the show on Twitter at @_ringsiderant. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows drop Friday morning at 9 Eastern. That's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. A couple of top guys doing top guy stuff. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows Friday mornings at 9 Eastern.
It's Friday. It's 9 a.m. You know what that means. Another great episode of the Ringside Rant is with you this week. And introducing your host, he is Cincinnati's favorite son, J.D. Justin Davis. And from Rochester, New York, he is the man with the magical voice, RJ. And as always, welcome to Ranters Nation. Welcome back to another episode of the Ringside Rant. I am the magical voice, RJ. I am joined. Well, let's send it up to the ring to get the proper introduction for this man right now.
It's Super Dave!
All right, Dave, come on.
Dave Miller! The Finger Bar is on! 1, 2, 3!
Well, welcome back, Dave. Justin's a little bit on, I think he's sleeping in. Context to it, we're recording at 10 o'clock Eastern, Sunday morning, excuse me. So, Justin's, I think he had a party hardy last night. So we'll have to mention that to him when he gets in here. So, Dave, what's
probably
up, man?
Probably. It's just occupational hazard when you work with young people.
Well, and that's what I thought, too. But I'm like, Christ, maybe it's just me because it's... And I'm sure you can relate too. Just getting up so early in the morning during the week for work, it's like I'm sleeping in for me. I slept to 7:30 today, and that's long. That's late for me.
That's what time I woke up. I went to bed. I mean, we had friends over last night, and by the time they left, it was pretty close to midnight. And I mean, they weren't hardly out the door, and I was already heading for bed because I couldn't keep my eyes open. And I get up 3 o'clock in the morning all during the week, but I actually slept till 7:30 this morning.
Yeah.
And that's just cause nature called.
I say, hopefully Stephanie wasn't standing over the bed with her machete from last week. So
she just realized that we actually told that story on the air. And I said, well, I mean, it makes a good story and it's on brand with some of the crazy crap. I mean,
well, there you go.
We would have also accepted a can of tuna fish.
Well, that too. I'm going to say that's a lethal weapon.
Man, she's a Renaissance woman for sure. incredible. I mean, she's incredibly talented. I mean, I'm not making fun of her. It's just,
sure.
It's a fun story because I was like, baby, I want to get you a 38. Because we live in Jackson, Mississippi is dangerous. And she works in Jackson, Mississippi.
Right.
And I said, baby, I'm going to get you a 38 to carry in your purse. Call me when I got a machete.
All right, then. I'm not messing with her. Cripe. As long as she doesn't travel with it when she goes out of town, then Christ.
I mean, yeah, I mean it stays in her car. But
yeah.
But I mean she's incredible. I mean there's nothing she can't do. I mean she makes t-shirts. I mean she makes incredible t-shirts with her vinyl machine. I mean she can make. When somebody's having a wedding, she puts floral arrangements together, just goes to Hobby Lobby and starts putting it all together, or she'll go to yard sales and find stuff, and just she can make your wedding affordable just because she's, I mean, just so good at being creative. And I mean, she went to, she bought a dishwasher one time at Sears. They were closing them out. It was a, man, I'm trying to think, a Cuisinart, no, what a Cuisinart. I'm trying to think of the name of this brand. It's a very good brand of appliance.
Mm-hmm.
And she bought it for like $75. And it didn't come with any of the wires or anything. So she went to Home Depot and she bought the wires and she used a YouTube video and she installed this dishwasher, electric and everything. But that's how she does things. I mean,
yeah, you can do me. It. Well, she can hot wire you too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's, well, we won't get into that. This is going to be a PG episode. So no, I'm joking. This is never a PG episode. Christ.
I told her when she turned. I told her when she turned 50, I told her when she turned 40, I was going to trade her in for 220s, and she said I was only wired for 110.
It seems about right. Yeah, it seems about right. What the hell?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, yeah, you know, I'm sure my wife's the same way. She can pretty much do anything and everything. It's like, it's all about how they're brought up. You know, her dad taught her a lot of stuff growing up too. So she can pretty much do anything with everything with anybody. And it's just like, perfect example. It's like we do the whole Christmas lights up here in December, everywhere. But I don't even bother anymore because it's not the way she wants. I said, I give up. You know, yeah. Do it. If you want it a certain way, you do it. Oh, they're not on the lamppost the certain way that I want it. They're not tight enough. The wires aren't close enough. I'm like, well, all right. Well, then you can do it then, because I'll just put them up there and just whatever. They're lights. They'll only be up for a month. So
I used to do that. I mean, I used to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I liked to do it, and it was ridiculous. I mean, almost a Christmas vacation level.
Sure.
And we'd bought a house when I was still in Texas, and I went and bought this yard art. It was a Santa sleigh being pulled by longhorns.
Mm-hmm.
A big state of Texas that lit up that said, Merry Christmas, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
I always like to use the clear lights.
Right.
And I lined the roof, the whole roof line. I mean, when I got done, I swear it looked like I'm trying to land airplanes out there. But this was a new neighborhood. There wasn't a whole lot of houses.
Sure.
And one Tuesday, a van pulled up and loaded all my stuff, stole all my yard art, all my Christmas stuff out the front yard.
Really?
And it was just one of the workers. I mean, one of the crews that was building houses got me.
Right. Because
there wasn't that many houses in this neighborhood yet. I think we were like the fourth house in the neighborhood. And when my stuff got stolen, I mean, it's truly the Grinch stole Christmas.
Well, literally, yeah.
I yanked every light off the house. And when I say I yanked them, I yanked them. And right. I threw them away, and I never did it again.
Unreal. I don't get it.
And that stuff wasn't cheap either.
Well, no, definitely not. Especially when you have to figure out between that and, you know, obviously the electrical bills.
Man, somebody that steals Christmas stuff, is they're lower than whale shit, and that's at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, well, yeah, but it's just like you got to be pretty low in your own personal life to steal Christmas stuff. But
right,
but no, there's a guy out here by my mom's out here in Buffalo area that does the whole, hey, well, he buys the radio frequency,
mm-hmm.
and then does the lights to the music, and he does that's like every, yeah, that's he does it every
that's
other
a different
year.
Level of talent.
Well, right, and I think he for his day job he's like an electrician or something, so he knows how to, you know, wire everything and the lights and all that jazz. But he used to do it every single year, and his whole yard is set up and decked out with lights and stuff.
And that's important because you just can't plug all those into a daisy chain and not blow breakers.
Right.
I learned. I mean, I was having to string around to the back of the house for those plugs. I mean, it took you had to spread them out because you'd blow the breakers.
Right.
You'd be tripping breakers all the time.
No,
those
I get
guys
that.
That do those light shows that are hooked up to music and. And they do that kind of production. We used to go to one when I was a kid across the street from my grandmother's house. And churches would actually load up their church buses and mm-hmm. take people. and they had like a huge front yard that was multi-level.
Mm-hmm.
You could, they had a path, and you could actually walk through the lights. I mean, it was a huge, huge light nativity scenes, and
mm-hmm.
and churches would actually take up what they'd call love offerings, mm-hmm. and give it to the family to pay, help offset the electrical expenses.
True. Yeah, because you don't think that that's a lot, but once you look at the end cost, it's not cheap by any means. But there's a bunch of places out here locally where I am too. There's a guy that used to do it. He basically had it, his whole yard was just all like Christmas ornaments, like, you know, like Santa Clauses and elves and stuff. And he, same sort of thing. He did it to the radio. But there's a place out in Syracuse that my wife and son go to every year. We actually drive through the park, yes. and they're all through that. And that's something that they've done every year. They do it with my sister-in-law and her kid, usually every year. And that's, it's probably about like an hour drive, so you just drive through and all that stuff. But
there's, you know, the one way that, in Louisiana, and there's yeah. one in Texas, right off of I-20. It's an incredible, incredible drive-through experience because it's through the woods. And I
sure.
mean, oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I think usually every town, every town usually has one that I've heard anyways, just by talking to the group of friends that we have and all that stuff. But no, we said that to say this week, we're actually going over the December 27th, 1982 edition of WCCW from Reunion Arena in Dallas, Texas. This episode was recorded on Christmas Day before 12,000 fans. Dave, was this kind of a...
That's
obviously,
a
you were
number.
In a.
That's a low number. There was 18,000 fans
right.
there.
Well, right, right.
There was not an empty seat in the house.
Right, and this was, and that this is when you were in attendance at this show, right?
Yes.
So, because was this kind of a tradition of having a show on Christmas Day to record, anyways?
Yes. I mean, they always did something on Christmas. They did something on Thanksgiving because people wanted something to do.
Or after they did all their stuff during the day, right? Because they wouldn't have this until probably about like 7 or 8 o'clock at night, right?
Right. And let's keep in mind that this is my second event.
Okay.
But we did Christmas every year after that, Thanksgiving every year after that. There wasn't Thanksgiving in 82. Thanksgiving started in 83 at Reunion Arena.
Okay.
There's an 81 Star Wars that's on Peacock. If they did in the Reunion Arena, I don't believe Reunion Arena was there before. I'd have to look at the date.
I don't think so.
But I mean, I'm sure they did Christmas shows. Christmas shows in the territories was not, I mean, that was common. But I know that 81 was at Reunion Arena because they put it on the network recently. This
now,
is
you,
my second
are you,
time.
Are you talking about Reunion Arena being up in 81 or...
Yes, I know it was up in 81. I'm not thinking
it was
opened
open
in 80,
in,
didn't it?
It was opened up in on April 28th, 1980, and it closed
yes.
its doors on June 30th of 2008 and demolished in November of 2009.
Yes.
It was held to, it was the first arena for the Dallas Mavericks in 1980 to 2001, the Dallas Stars from 93 to 2001. And then a bunch of minor league
Dallas Sidekicks.
1984 to 1984. Yeah, 1984 to 2004.
That was our indoor soccer team.
Soccer. Yeah, yeah.
Indoor
okay.
soccer. It was excellent. Oh, I loved it. The greatest show on turf.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, that was pre St. Louis Rams, right? But a little context behind it too, from the 1980s through the late 2000s. The following talent, music artists played at Reunion Arena: Michael Jackson, Paul McCartney, Prince, Van Halen.
Saw Michael Jackson there.
Frank Sinatra, Elton John, David Bowie, Madonna, Gloria Estefan, Motley Crue, Pink Floyd, Queen, Journey, U2, REM, and Radiohead.
There's a lot more than that.
Well, but that's according to the internet, and
yes.
of course, if it's on the internet, it's got to be true.
Phil Collins was actually up on top of one of the entrances on a sure. by a screen in the Take Me Home video.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. Huh. Well, hey, I guess there's a, you know, beginning to everything, but the next two episodes, the one we're doing this week, and then we'll get to the one we're doing next week, but a little context to it. We're actually going to be welcoming in Top Gal Amy next week to watch the next week's episode with us, the match in the cage with Carrie and Rick, but we'll get to that.
Passing the join up.
Yeah, exactly. Of course. Well, we got to watch what we say because we don't want to swear in front of lovely Miss Amy, but I think.
No, it's cool. It's cool. She'll light a candle for us when she goes to church. It's all right.
Well, I think that I don't think there's enough candles in the church for me. I'll be honest with you.
She has. I like to think that she has an eternal flame for me.
I think that's pretty much what. Yeah. I think that's pretty much what the probably happened for me as well, Dave. But yeah, JFK had one, and why not Dave and RJ from Ringside Rant too? So I think we can share one. It'll be a big enough flame for both of us. But this is, like I said, it seems to be a tradition here. When did it end where they were having Christmas Day recordings? Was it pretty much when WCCW folded? Were they run it every year?
They did it every year. I think 87, 86, 87, maybe the last year.
Okay.
I mean, it went downhill quick as attendance wise when they left the NWA and Ric Flair quit coming.
Right. So that was probably right when he started with WCW then, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Flair, that is.
Yeah. I mean, world class, I think. Flair's last time in for Christmas
would probably have been probably mid 80s.
I think 85 might have been his last year in for Christmas.
I was going to say probably about 85, 86, because then
I think
he really
86. Well, went 86 over to the NWA. 86 was Von Erich Freebird main event. And
well, yeah, but even that, it wasn't, you know, that's, you would think that would still put, you know, fans in the stands for that. You would think
about 6,000.
Yeah, but still though, in 86 though, that's not bad. Well, Christ, I think towards the end, WCW was doing about that.
But you don't understand, they were 18,000 every time Flair was there.
Well, okay.
The first year Flair wasn't there, the people weren't there either.
Sure. Well, no, but that makes sense, though.
And that made a big impression on me as far as being a Ric Flair fan. I recognized that, because I was also disappointed. When they left the NWA, I was disappointed because they were starting it. By the time that they did that, I'd been a wrestling fan long enough that, I mean, to me, them recognizing making their own world title didn't hold the same. It wasn't as prestigious as the NWA belt.
Sure.
And we also had cable TV, so we were watching. We could still watch the NWA.
Okay.
I didn't hate world class action when they did it. There was still good wrestling going on. It was just a disappointment. It's when I started realizing that I was a Ric Flair fan, the chase to, and I realized after Kerry won the belt that seeing him chase it was a lot more fun than seeing him win it. So,
but that's, it kind of seemed like the mentality there though, towards before Rick left was with Kerry chasing it. And even with Kevin too, when they were chasing it, it seemed to be, you know, they got over even more until they won it, you know?
Right. And that was how it was everywhere.
Yeah.
That's how it is today.
Yeah.
How hot was Hangman Page?
When he was chasing it, and then he won it, and it's like, okay, now what do we do?
Church.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dusty Rhodes was not an exciting NWA champion.
But he was chasing it though.
But when he was chasing it, it was great.
It was fantastic. But you can even say the same thing about Harley Race too.
Yeah. Well,
Maybe when he was chasing it, anyways.
But I was disappointed because I got to the arena thinking it was going to be Kevin Von Erich versus Harley Race. I mean, Kevin Von Erich versus Ric Flair. Ric Flair dropped the belt to Harley Race, so Harley Race was there.
Sure.
And I remember the disappointment. Oh, man, I want to see Kevin and Flair.
Mm-hmm.
But the Harley Race was excellent. I didn't feel disappointed after I saw the match. But I got to Reunion Arena for the Great American Bash. And expecting Ric Flair to defend the title against Dusty Rhodes, but Dusty Rhodes won the title. I saw Dusty Rhodes defend the title against Ric Flair. Wasn't the same.
No, I get that. No, I completely understand that. That's for sure.
It was just a different animal.
Right. But it seems to be now, then and now, you can kind of compare and contrast it, is
there's money in the chase.
Exactly. And once they get there, it's like it goes over like a fart in church. It's like, okay, now what the hell do we do?
You need a champion. You need a champion that you want to see get beat.
And I think that's where...
I take that back. Let me rephrase. You think you want to see them get beat.
Perfect example. Roman Reigns.
Right.
You want to see him get beat, but who's going to beat him, though? You know what I mean? Because I don't know if you saw yesterday with this whole Riyadh thing at Crown Jewel. You got, what's his face?
Logan Paul. This is genius.
Oh,
I absolutely love
it. Everybody's crapping on it online, which everybody's going to crap on it anyway.
If you're crapping on it, you don't get it.
Money.
But you don't get it.
It's a draw. Yeah.
And why are you going to shit on Logan Paul? He hadn't embarrassed himself since any match he's had in WWE. He has not embarrassed himself.
This will be his third match in WWE.
And what
can you say? His first match was at WrestleMania. His second match was at SummerSlam.
You remember him doing the Amigos at WrestleMania?
Yeah, doing that got Amigos? Over.
He did them better than Eddie's own son, Dominic.
Yeah.
Dominic did the absolute McMahon taking a stunner level three Amigos.
I wouldn't go that far,
Sucked.
I wouldn't go that far, Dave, but...
I mean, I'm excited about what Dominic Mysterio is doing right now.
Oh, I absolutely
love it. He don't ever
need
to do the Three Amigos again, because that was horrible.
But that's one of the things, too. It's like, you have your Ric Flair, Charlotte Flair wall, and I bring that up because my son goes to... Target yesterday with my wife, and he's like, daddy, I saw, they're sending me pictures of action figures and stuff. I'm like, I don't have enough room here to put it, but it's like, oh, they had a Ric Flair and Charlotte Flair action figure set. I'm like, oh, okay, that's great. I'm like, I'm sure it's probably the same thing you have. But he brought up, okay, there's Rey Mysterio. I'm like, crap. I'm like, I don't think
actual size.
If I were,
action figures are actual size
to sale. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I have one back. Oh, maybe I don't. That's Kurt Angle back there. But if I were to make a wall dedicated to anybody, it would either be Rey Mysterio or Kurt Angle. Person, two of my favorite wrestlers of all time. Maybe Chris Jericho, but even that, though, it's like, but yeah, he brought that up. I'm like, oh, I got to tell Dave that, because he's like, oh, he knows who Charlotte and.
Get you some floating shelves.
Yeah, I got to put them over here because I got this right here. I actually have the personalized Jeff Jarrett's autograph 8x11. He actually put Titan Up at the bottom of it, so I know it's dedicated to me, because him and I go back and forth between the Titans and the Bills, and they're playing tomorrow night. So anyways, but no, that's going to be over there. I'm going to start that wall next, because you can see everything behind me.
You just got to get those floating shelves and put them on there. Anchor them. Put some shelves up and you can get some stuff up. But that's a perfect between your dorm that
where
right exactly behind you. You could clear that wall.
Yeah.
And you could put some shelf. You could probably put two or three floating shelves there. Yeah. And then you could take your pictures and I'm pointing like anybody can see.
Like anybody can see.
But you could take all your stuff that you have hanging on that wall and put it on your flat wall over there.
Yeah. Right. And just put everything right behind me. Yeah. But no, and that's one of the things. This is my crown jewel right here. That was from last year's Top Guy Weekend in Chicago.
Right.
I got to look around because I can't remember. But you got like David Crockett's autograph. You got Jeff Jarrett. You got Jerry Lawler. You got Angle. You got Bischoff. You got Kyoto. But no, it's something. I actually got that from Dave Silva. He's like, dude, you want it? Hey,
Silva,
you want this?
The best?
Oh, he's absolutely the best. Dude, I actually talked to him when we're at the showcase there. We're backstage on the green room. And I absolutely one of the nicest guys ever. If you have never met Dave Silva before, I would go out of your way to meet him.
You just want to hug him.
Exactly. He gives one of the best hugs. It comes close between him and Efren. But Efren's like a grizzly bear when he hugs you, but yeah.
Would you ever watch it? Do you ever watch Scrubs?
Back in the day.
Remember the episode where they had the guy that everybody loved him in the hospital?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just that guy.
Yeah, that's Dave.
And Kelso was getting aggravated, and then Kelso went in there and he smiled at Kelso, and Kelso liked him too.
Oh yeah,
that's Silva.
Well, but I think
he's
know,
so generous. I mean,
exactly.
I've got a shirt that Tony Schiavone wore on Thunder. But it's the embroidered WCW Thunder logo on it. And it's, I mean, he got some stuff from Tony out of his attic, and he sent me the shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the hell of it.
As you know, it's like Conrad's got a handful of great people on his staff there, and Dave Silva and Efren are two of them. And I'm not just, I say that not to, you know, dismiss anybody else by name, but it's just legitimately nice guys.
Yeah, period. Evan, Josh Odom.
Yeah.
I mean, just the
Pauly B.
Oh God, yeah. How great is Pauly B?
Dude, he's
the Doc Gallows stunt double of Bad Free Shows.
We gotta message him and tell him that now though too.
Oh, I told him, I said, you better hope there's never a jealous husband coming looking for Doc Gallows or you're screwed.
Yeah, right. No kidding. But it's just, and he's one of those guys too. It's just like, he's deceptively tall. Him and Alfred. I'm like, okay, they're like tall guys. And like the first time I met him, I'm like, holy shit, you're tall as shit.
Yeah, and I'm short, so.
Well, it depends on what bar you're leaving.
Most of the time I'm 5'6" when I leave a 7-Eleven.
Well, at least you didn't say the Quickie Mart. Anyways, but you know, to get this the show on the road, there prior to the opening match, they have David and Kevin. Supporting.
Stoned. God almighty, Kevin was stoned.
Yeah. You remember that now?
Oh, let me set this up. I worked on Sundays. In 1982, I worked on Sundays. So watching World Class Championship Wrestling's Channel 39 Sunday show was not something that I did. Unless I was off on a Sunday, which was rare.
Right.
I watched Saturday Night Show from Fort Worth, which in my mind was a much better broadcast. So I wasn't privy to seeing these episodes. Also, we're going to see some things on this episode that foreshadow what's going to happen on next week's episode. But I'm in the arena for the second time. I'm not aware. Like, I don't hear them setting up that they, as three brothers, could challenge for the six-man title and be, you know, better than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Explaining why they're not in the tournament.
Right. Which is hard to believe, though, you know, but they're not in the tournament.
But, I mean, David's challenging for the David's defending the Texas title on this card. Mm-hmm. Kevin's defending the American title on this card.
Mm-hmm. So they're involved. It's just not in the six-man.
Right. So, and Kerry's going for the world title. So their priorities are... they're already taking care of business on this show. But you're going to see, I'll point it out when we get to the end of the episode, but he's laying the groundwork that the Von Erichs are going to be challengers for this championship. Also, Kevin talks about that Dave knows these guys because Dave's been off traveling.
Sure.
It's established that Dave has been away traveling and he knows the Freebirds from the other territories.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't know that much about them. Later, right. I'll find out about what happened in 1981, that Michael Hayes actually rescued Kevin Von Erich from Terry Gordy and Jimmy Snuka.
Sure.
So he has a little experience with the Freebirds, but not good.
Right.
You know, I mean, Michael saved him, but Terry Gordy didn't. Terry Gordy was picking on him. So they're laying the groundwork for this six-man, the finals of the six-man championship.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about the team that's made the finals.
So
they're
we
from
got,
Canada.
Yeah,
Canada.
We got
Iron Mike Sharp and Ben Sharp teaming with Tom Still. Tom Still is not Tom Still. Tom Still is Johnny Mantell.
Okay.
Johnny Mantell from Montague County, Texas. The brother of Ken Mantell, who we're going to see later in the Battle Royal.
In the Battle Royal, yeah.
But for some reason, they brought him in as Tom Steele.
Really? Okay.
And I didn't realize this until I watched it this morning. I'm looking at him and said, that's Johnny Mantell.
Because why Johnny Mantel, why did they do that? Just because they didn't want to have it associated with his brother?
I guess. Yeah. And he was new to the area. Okay. New to coming to World Class. But we're gonna see him at 83 mm-hmm. wrestling as Johnny Mantel. And I'll give you a little nugget if you want to watch a match that's got just you can probably find it. You have to Google to find maybe find which broadcast it's on. You might be able to watch it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Johnny Mantel versus Gentleman Chris Adams. It's a 15-minute time limit draw.
Yeah.
That gets 5 more minutes. And okay. it's a really, really good match. It's a lot of psychology. It gets you into it. It's an opening bout that's just, you know, not shouldn't be much. Johnny Mantel was an opening bout guy for a while. It was a really good match, and I've talked to Johnny Mantel, and I told him that one night I was working a show that he was there. And I told him, I said, you know, and I actually brought my laptop computer to wrestling training one mm-hmm. night, and I got the other trainees to watch your match with Chris Adams that was a time limit draw. And he said, let me tell you a story about that match. He knew exactly which match I was talking about. He said, you know why we got 5 more minutes? Because Chris Adams needed his hand raised. He didn't think he should have gone to a draw with me.
Really?
And threw a fit about it. He thought he should have got the win.
In the ring, or did he like go off
beforehand?
Oh, before, okay.
He threw a fit about it being a time limit draw. So they set it up where the crowd would go 5 more minutes.
Now, is that something that they normally would do though? When they go to a time limit draw, would all the fans would normally do that?
You would get, if it was a good match,
yeah.
The fans would start chanting. It wasn't like today with "This is awesome."
Sure.
For matches that aren't awesome.
Right.
I mean, if it was good, they'd want 5 more minutes.
Right. Well, it makes sense.
It wasn't just on a 15 or a 10-minute match. It would sometimes on a 30-minute match. It was not uncommon in the 80s that you would get the 5 more minute chant. Normally, though, I mean, the face would normally encourage the crowd to start chanting for it. But he told me the reason they actually, and very seldom ever did they give them 5 more minutes.
Right.
But this particular time they did, and that's what Johnny Mantel told me, is that Chris Adams was being so difficult about it that he gave him the 5 more minutes so he could get the win.
Well, that makes sense.
And Chris Adams wasn't a heel. Chris Adams wasn't a heel at the time. This was basically your face versus face opening bout.
Yeah.
And, Johnny Mantel later became associated with the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame that moved to Wichita Falls, Texas, and now is in complete shambles. Items were sold. A lot of people got their stuff back now.
Yeah.
There's a lady that got a hold of everything, and the actual items are being returned to the rightful owners and the owner's family. Travis Orndorff got his father's stuff back from there and actually had it. That's he got those robes back. And got them and had them at StarCast. So that's an interesting sidebar that I discovered this morning, that Tom Steele was indeed Johnny Mantel. And if they'd called him Johnny Mantel, there might have been questions why they didn't use Johnny Mantel and Kim Mantel in a third partner.
Sure.
Instead of the Steele brothers.
Yeah.
Instead of the Steele brothers. I mean, instead of the Sharp brothers. And a lot of people today that, if y'all actually go back and take time to watch this, you'll see Iron Mike Sharp and remember him from WWE television.
Yeah,
he wasn't always, and some of y'all may think he's enhancement talent, but in 82 he wasn't enhancement talent, and he went on to be a staple of the Tuesday night show on USA in preliminary matches, but he also won a lot, and he had an armband. He had like a leather thing on his arm that he would use as a weapon.
Yeah.
So an Iron Mike Sharp was not... I mean, you'll hear Bruce tell stories about him, that he's the one that's excessively gets obsessive about being clean and got locked into buildings because he's taking long showers. And but Iron Mike Sharp here, to me, when I saw this opening bout, I didn't think... I mean, you knew the Freebirds were going to win.
Sure.
Even on my second time at the matches, I knew the Freebirds were going to win. There was no way the Freebirds were going to get beat by these guys. But as the match went on, you started to think they had a chance. Because Iron Mike... This was a good match.
Yeah, because we had Michael Hayes comes on, and mentions that weather conditions prevented Buddy Roberts from getting to Dallas, and they replaced him with David Von Erich, which I thought it was fairly interesting that they did that, because obviously, as you said, you get the Freebirds and the Von Erichs feud in a few years. But I think they complemented each other very, very well. They worked well with each other.
David even did heel. David was doing heel stuff in this match.
Yeah. Do you think they should have played with that a little bit later? With him being a heel, or was he just so over in Texas?
That would have never happened. He didn't change. Watch David's matches. David wrestled like a heel. Yeah. That's why David was my favorite, because David was believable. And, I mean, his promos, and I hate the Channel 11 shows are gone.
Sure.
Because they recorded over them. But David Von Erich grabbed Gary Hart by the throat one night and backed him up at the Will Rogers Coliseum and backed him up to a wall. I mean, they walked off where they had the set that said Channel 11, KTVT. Mm-hmm. But he walked out and grabbed Gary Hart by the throat, and he pushed him up against a wall. And I'll never forget, he said, "You disgust me." I mean, you thought David Von Erich was about to beat the living. I mean, he interrupted his interview. I mean, it was. But I believe that David Von Erich could whip your ass.
Well, I believe any of the Von Erichs could whip.
But I mean, David stood out.
Yeah.
He was different. Kerry was muscular, Kevin was acrobatic, and David would whip your ass in a bar. And I believe that. And David was a man and a half. He's probably more like his father than any of them.
Right.
And I'm not saying that as a – I'm not dissing Kevin or Kerry. I'm just saying he was different. And he stood out. And he could cut a promo. His promos were better than the others.
No, that makes sense. So, yeah, I would say, yeah.
Except this one before the show, because they – you could tell they enjoyed Christmas with the family. They were fucked up.
Yeah.
Pardon my language. I got tickled looking at Kevin. Kevin looked like he was having a hard time holding it together.
in every sense of the word, too.
But David comes out and offers his services. I give you my body.
Right.
But I know if I was stuck in Atlanta, my brothers couldn't get there, that you two would have my back.
Right. Right.
So yeah, David coming out. And he had to take his sweats off in the ring because he wasn't ready to wrestle.
So we see David here, but Kevin, you know, is it just the fact because he's defending the singles title why he wouldn't be with him?
David defended singles title too, but they prefaced it, and they had prefaced it on the Channel 11 show. So I did know that David had a history with the Freebirds. He was hyping up the Freebirds coming in.
Right.
Kevin said, "I'm not real sure about those guys." David.
Okay,
knows
so that's why.
David knows. So it was established that David Von Erich was a friend to the Freebirds when they were coming in.
Mm-hmm.
He was excited about the Freebirds coming to the area. Those were his friends.
Yeah.
And so that's why David did. I don't think it's so much to do that Kevin was defending the title.
Right. So we see Terry Gordy here, man. I love going back and seeing a lot of this Terry Gordy and Michael Hayes stuff back in the day. And it seems to, we might have talked about this before in previous episodes, but Terry Gordy was just so damn good as a heel too. Do you think that they WWF at that time really missed the boat with pulling him in when they pulled Kerry in, as far as making him a dastardly heel opposite Hogan in the 80s?
I think it would have worked. I think the Freebirds burnt. I think they tore their ass with WWF because they brought them in. They brought them in for a quick cup of coffee.
Yeah, because that was like late 80s, right?
It was mid 80s.
Mid 80s? Okay.
I mean, it was closer to 85 than it was to 90.
Sure.
Because they'd just come off the AWA run.
Okay.
And they came in there. You know, they tore their ass. They weren't acting right. So more Michael than Terry. But, you know, they tried to bring him in as the executioner later. And
yeah,
it was after he'd had his stroke or his incident on the airplane, and he was never the same. But that at that time, if you could have got Terry Gordy in 85,
mm-hmm.
if you got him in 85, 86 to go against Hogan, I think, I mean, he would have. Because, I mean, Gordy could I mean, when he bounced all over the ring, one of the best big men that ever did it. And I mean, they established, Gordy didn't talk before this match, but they established in this ring what a badass Terry Gordy was. Because they used Ben Steele twice. Ben Steele came in to interfere, and Gordy just hit him one time and knocked him out of the ring.
Right.
And Bill Mercer even said something like, that Ben Steele found out.
He found out real quick how badass he is.
Then he did it, and then he did it again. So Gordy ran in and saved Michael twice, and it didn't take but one lick both times.
On Ben Steele. I think that was
not Ben Steele, Ben Sharp. Ben Sharp is
what. Ben Sharp, yeah. But it seemed to be like this match was like that, where Hayes was the finesse and Gordy was the rough and tough and beat the shit out of you kind of thing, kind of guy. Excuse me. But what I found too is here, I'm like, you want to, call these tag teams something different. Why not call the team of the Sharps and Steel be Sharp is Steel?
I thought that earlier when I was watching it. Sure, yeah.
I'm like, that's, but even spell it the way their names are,
Steel, Sharp and Steel.
Yeah. But we see obviously the new champs here with the Freebirds and David Von Erich. But then it was interesting to see it after the fact that, David gives up his share of the titles.
Let's go back to the match real quick, RJ.
Sure.
The match had two referees in the ring.
Yeah, I was going to, overlooked that. Yeah.
And that wasn't uncommon for world class in 82 to put two referees in the ring. And they did it a little bit in 83, and then it became a more special occasion later.
Yeah.
But you had Bronco Lubitsch in there, and the other referee was Nick Roberts.
Okay.
Nick Roberts. And Nick Roberts is Nicola Roberts' father.
Really?
Yes.
That's an interesting side note. I didn't realize that she was she's second generation.
Yes. Nick Roberts was a promoter.
Interesting.
And Nicola Roberts was his daughter. So that's Baby Doll's daddy in the ring. He was doing absolutely nothing during the match. It seemed like Bronco was trying to stay out of the way. With two referees in there, it was hard for him to stay out of the way. That's the referee eyes now.
Right.
And then when all hell broke loose at the end of the match, neither one of them was trying to control the chaos. They were watching. Both of them were watching David get the high knee in the pin.
Make sure that everybody saw it, though. You didn't have any smash finish.
You had Gordy and Hayes brawling with the other two, and I just thought even with two referees, nobody was trying to get them back out of the ring. It was
right.
Stood out to me, and at the time, it was just pure excitement. In the arena, I was purely excited for this.
Sure, but did you think David was the right person to get the fall? You think? Hayes or Gordy should have.
For the storytelling, David gave them this championship.
Gotcha.
And then gave their brother, and if you watching the promo, that Gordy was like, okay, and then Gordy started talking, and Hayes didn't believe in it, and it's almost like Hayes is like,
what's going on?
Like, he's kind of insulted that David won't tag with him.
Mm-hmm.
And Gordy's mind, which I think in later promos, now they've become the enemy because they want what they have.
Sure. Right. But I gave it to you.
But the foreshadowing, but if you're watching this on TV and you weren't at the arena, then I might wonder in the Cary Flair match after seeing this promo, if I'd been watching wrestling for a while, I'd have picked up that they're not happy with David's decision.
Right.
But this makes the betrayal even bigger because David Von Erich handed y'all the six-man title.
Yeah.
You're only the six-man champions because David won it for you.
Right. So just and then this long, is how you rebooking.
And you repay it. This is how you repay the Von Erichs.
Yeah.
With this steel court with. So this is, and keep in mind, y'all, the six-man title was created for this feud.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't sell it.
Right.
You didn't see it coming. But now in hindsight, this six-man championship was custom made for a money feud that's going to pop a territory. Because now you're going to see full seats at the Sportatorium.
Yeah.
When you watch these shows coming up in 83, they're packed. There's not any more of these half-empty crowds. 1983 is an incredible year for World Class Championship Wrestling, and it was sparked by this night.
Yeah, I get that, yeah. It, like I said, in long-term booking, too, which was absolutely great. We'll see that coming up, too. So prior to the next match, you got Mercer interviews referee David Manning, just explaining the rules for this battle royal. Eliminations. Yeah, well, no, they're definitely different. I want to get your thoughts on it, too, because it's not like a battle royal you'd see nowadays. Elimination occurs when a wrestler submits, gets pinned, or is tossed over the top rope. When only three wrestlers remain, the match changes into a $10,000 on a pole match. Very interesting.
World Class did some innovative stuff with battle royals.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 80s, battle royals were huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, they weren't done all the time. Normally, they were a good reason to bring Andre the Giant to town.
Right.
I remember being excited to see a battle royal. This was cool for me.
Yeah.
Because they had all these wrestlers in the ring. I thought it was a very, very cool match. It was neat for me, especially my second time to ever see this live. Sure. My first battle royal. I loved it. I thought it was really cool to watch. And
it was interesting to see, because you wouldn't think that was something back in the day. And I'm watching, I'm like, why the hell is he pinning? Oh, that's why, because that's part of it.
And y'all roll your eyes at $10,000 on a rope, but we still believed that the winners got the money. I mean,
right.
This was before it was before the curtain was revealed. We thought for $10,000 everybody's, and they did some good stuff. I mean, Bugsy's still feuding with Devastation Incorporated and Hart mm-hmm. and Hussein. And
sure,
I mean, the spot with Bundy where all of them dogpiled Bundy to pin him.
Yeah, I absolutely love that.
And he kicked out.
Yeah.
But the referee missed it because they were trying to get David Von Erich to leave because he got eliminated quick.
Which I wasn't really surprised because he still was, you know, in the other match, you know?
Yeah, I mean, David was, the six-man match was early in the card.
Sure.
And then he defended the Texas title against Wild Bill Irwin.
David, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, the opening bout for that night was Brian Adias defeating Captain Frank Dusick. They were mm-hmm. both in the Battle Royal.
Sure.
We had a Little People match with Lone Eagle versus Little Tokyo. Jose Lothario and Al Madrill defeated the Magic Dragon and Checkmate. David Von Erich defeated Wild Bill Irwin, defending the Texas title. Then David Von Erich and the Fabulous Freebirds defeated, you know, the Sharp and Steel.
And then we had the Battle Royal.
Sharper than Steel.
Yeah, there you go.
And then Kevin Von Erich defeated King Kong Bundy by disqualification for the American title.
Right.
Kevin was the champion going in. And then you had Flair and Kerry. And then the night closed with Kim Mantell. And he defeated the spoiler, Checkmate. Well, I'm going to tell you how they went out. David Von Erich was the first one eliminated over the top rope. King Kong Bundy was then, after he did that fantastic kick out, because even Bill Mercer said that the referee wasn't counting the pin, but Bronco was up on the stairs trying to get David down off of Frank Dusick.
Mm-hmm.
And then and David Manning was trying to get him down. But Bundy kicks out with all those people on top of him. Then he's showing off his feet of strength. And Bugsy McGraw drop kicks him in the back. And then, I mean, did you see the speed? Like, it didn't look like BS. I mean, Bundy went over the top rope with authority. That's impressive.
Yeah.
And then Ben Sharp got pinned right. in a battle royal. Then Jose Lothario goes over the top rope. And then the Checkmate goes over the top rope. And then Frank Dusick over the top rope. And then the spoiler over the top rope. Then that Wild Bill Irwin over the top rope, and then Bugsy over the top rope, and then the Magic Dragon gets pinned, and you're down to the last three. It says it wasn't. Bob Steele goes over the top rope. It was right. actually Tom Steele over the top rope. Al Madrill over the top rope. Now you're down to Brian Adias, Johnny Mantell, and Mike Sharp.
Right.
So then
that's when $10,000 on a pole really comes into play.
See David Manning climb up the pole and put the $10,000 check on the top of it. Now here's where it's interesting. They can eliminate each other and then climb up with no opposition, or they can try to see who can get up that pole.
Yeah. And they Brian go right Adias, after it.
Brian Adias was climbing that pole pretty impressively.
Yeah.
And I mean, it looked like a struggle to keep them off the pole.
Right.
And then Mike Sharp throws Ken Mantell. Ken Mantell, by the way, former NWA light heavyweight champion, junior heavyweight champion, and later became Booker for World Class, Booker for Wild West, Booker for UWF.
Right.
Ken Mantell's done some stuff. I mean, he actually splintered off from World Class and went with Gary Hart and started Wild West.
Mm-hmm.
It was short-lived.
Right.
But Ken Mantell defecting to UWF is why a lot of the world-class wrestlers ended up going to UWF. Sunshine, the Freebirds, Terry Taylor, Chris Adams. I mean, the mass defection.
Sure.
You have my Iron Mike Sharp throw Mantell over the top rope.
Oh, right, okay.
And Mantell doesn't go to the floor. He goes to the apron and rolls back in.
Yeah.
You got Adias up on that pole. Look like he's fixing to get there. Sharp gets him. Sharp gets him down. And Sharp eliminates Adias, who was the crowd favorite. Everybody would have loved to see Adidas win that.
Sure.
As he eliminates Adias, Mantell's up the pole. Sharp's getting to, I mean, there's a struggle for a minute on, you know, Mantell's holding on to the top part of the pole, which is like a T-bar. Mm-hmm. He's up for holding on. He kicks Sharp and gets him to fall, gets that $10,000 check. And that's how the night ends, you know?
Right.
So that was, I don't remember being, after the emotions, it was, I'm sure that battle royal was hard to follow, that world title match.
Sure.
So.
Now, what would they have to put on a pole to have you climb a pole to get it down? A little context to it.
I'd need a belt.
Yeah.
I'd need a belt.
Now, you said previous to we started to hit record, is you're up to, you got number 70 coming.
Yes, I do.
And then you said you're done after that.
Well,
for now.
I mean, I wasn't looking for number 70. It just fell in my lap. But
right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't have any more room. Something would have to go.
You'd have to get rid of something
put there. But there's not very many more that, I mean, I've completed my Ric Flair collection.
Sure.
I've got a replica of every belt that Ric Flair ever held. I've got a replica of every belt that Charlotte Flair's held.
Mm-hmm.
I've got most of the world class belts. I need a tag. I need the tag belt. If I had the tag belt's the only thing missing from the world class collection.
Right.
So, yeah, I'll probably at some point maybe add the tag belt.
Sure.
But
that makes sense.
I mean, I've got pretty much
everything you want.
Right. Yeah. Now, I would like to have an AEW TNT championship.
Right.
I like the TNT championship.
Yeah.
It's, to me, that is my current favorite wrestling belt. On
the one they have right now or the original?
No, the one that Wardlow has. I like the stones in it.
Good is he, though? How good is Wardlow?
Wardlow's great. They've done Wardlow. I thought Eric called him AEW's Goldberg.
I wouldn't go that far, but
I don't think it's – no, I don't think it's a compliment. I don't know if Eric was being dismissive when he said it, but that's a hell of a compliment, and they booked Wardlow right.
You mean as far as the way he's booked or the way that, you know, his wrestling ability? Because he's athletic as hell, though.
He's a good wrestler. He's not bad. I mean, but he's dominating.
Yeah. You mean as far as that goes, you think so?
And then the power bomb. I mean, when he does power bombs, like Goldberg's jackhammer, you know we're going for the power bomb.
Multiples.
And I don't know that multiples are necessary.
Yeah, but that's kind of getting him over as that monster.
I've got a really good friend. I'm not going to name drop him.
Sure.
That doesn't agree with me on this, but I kind of think that right now what WWE is doing with Braun Strowman is kind of a tongue-in-cheek shot at Wardlow.
You think?
Well, I mean, Why the powerbomb? If the guy that you would compare to him on the other channel is doing a powerbomb, why would you do the powerbomb?
Right, you do something different.
I'd like to hear what everybody else thinks about that.
Yeah, you can hit us up at ringside rant or at ref super Dave PWD.
But I like the powerbomb better than these hands.
Oh yeah, by far. But you could also do something different though too. You can even have Strowman do a jackhammer or something.
If they put Braun Strowman out there and he did a jackhammer, immediately everybody's going to say that he's trying to be like Goldberg. They're trying to make him like Goldberg.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
But
I get that then.
But here's how it works. And here's why I think what I think. AEW takes a lot of shots, unnecessary shots at WWE. They poke the bear.
Sure.
Well, Triple H is in charge now.
Yeah.
Triple H ain't above firing. I mean, he'll take a shot. He'll take shots at the opposition itself.
Yeah.
I mean, but what I'm saying is, you have Braun Strowman out there doing this powerbomb. Now, if people see Wardlow doing the powerbomb, he's trying to be like Braun Strowman. Mm-hmm. Because Braun Strowman's on the bigger brand.
Sure.
Even though Wardlow was already doing it. You see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
You might be undermining it. Maybe I'm thinking way too much into it, but you can't deny the comparison.
Oh no, I completely agree.
Comparison, and Braun only needs one power bomb. Wardlow's doing multiples.
Yeah, so that's kind of a subtle shot at them.
So
I get it.
There you go. I mean, I think that, and I mean, it's just playful fun. It's not, but I mean, you just got so much firing across the bow unnecessarily. I would like to see AEW quit taking so many shots at WWE.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but that's me.
Yeah, no, I get you, man.
That wraps up our world class talk for the week.
So let's get into some rivalries talk this week, Dave. We got a couple good ones this week. We're going to only have the two with Justin. He's MIA. We're going to have to call him after and see if he's alive.
We can give him two of them next week.
Yeah. Yeah.
He can use that one and another one.
Sure. But, Dave, this week you got one that, it's going to rank up high. I think, let's send it up and get a little context, a little promo from your pick this week.
I'm damn sick and tired of watching you walk around with that WWE championship belt.
One title shot.
That's it. The Stone Cold Stunner strikes. Look at this. McMahon just hit the referee. Austin has his back one. The Stone Thunder. Up to Shane McMahon. Two, three. What? Steve Austin just got screwed. How brilliant is Vince McMahon?
I want to make Stone Cold's life miserable.
What I got here is a legally binding contract, which gives me a title shot at The Rock.
The 30 participants. All you have to do, Austin, is defeat The Undertaker in a buried alive match.
Stone Cold is a competitor.
Mr. McMahon dangled a piece of meat. That being a shot to be in the Royal Rumble. And Stone Cold bit.
No chance in hell
Vince McMahon, through Steve Austin.
Number one, number one.
And on top of that, put a $100,000 bounty on my head, which means
that individual who eliminates Austin will be $100,000 richer.
Vince, you thought you were some kind of mastermind when you made yourself
number 30
in the Rumble. Oh, no, that came back and bit you on your ass when Commissioner Shawn Michaels made you
the second man
in the Royal Rumble.
Austin, there is no chance in
hell.
So Vince McMahon and Steve Austin, man, that was the biggest rivalry of all, one of them of all time, and even during the Attitude Era.
Changed the business forever.
No, by far. By far.
Changed the business forever.
Because I don't think without that, I don't think we'd see a lot of these feuds today. It really set the bar.
Right. I mean, it destroyed WCW. I mean,
if you think about it, it really put them out of business. If you think about it, like outside the box a little bit to a certain extent.
You could perceive it put them out of business. I mean, we know now that there's a lot of extenuating. I mean, they didn't have a chance. They didn't have a chance in hell with Time Warner. They could not compete on the same level.
Sure, but I don't think it had. They couldn't really counteract with any other feud.
No,
at that time, because you can say, okay, well, Hogan and this person, or Hogan and that person, but Hogan and Sting, but that it didn't really live up to everything that Austin and McMahon were doing.
You made McMahon, who's not an in-ring performer. That's the incredible part.
Right.
Probably the greatest heel in history.
Exactly. Oh, I think so. But it goes to show you, too, how good Stephanie is, too.
Yeah, but, I mean, and just that struggle against Vince.
Sure.
Put Austin.
Put him in another stratosphere.
You made a total badass, a sympathetic character.
But do you think with
insurmountable odds?
Sure.
But then he was filling up the Corvette with concrete. He was blowing up the DX bus. He was yanking the wheels off the limousines. He was shooting them with beer. He was driving Zambonis, terrorizing them. He put a gun to his head and made him piss himself.
Yeah.
Attacked him in a hospital.
Do you think that was shoot piss or real piss?
I think it was shoot piss. Actually, I think Bruce said it was working piss, but.
Or the piss or shoot piss, yeah.
But I mean, he attacked him with a bedpan in a hospital. I mean, they did, and then they got on the same page, which, whether it was good for business or not, but Vince McMahon and Stone Cold Steve Austin is still money in 2022.
Oh, by far, yeah.
Because... yeah, when Vince was out there acting like an ass on night two at WrestleMania.
Out came Austin.
Because I expected Vince to come out to congratulate him after his match and he'd take a stunner on night one. But when Vince started doing Vince stuff after that match, then all of a sudden I knew, here comes Austin.
Yeah.
Here
comes Austin. Yeah.
And, I mean, it was a horrible stunner, but... you
still,
to get,
still got over. People are talking about it, though. We're still exactly. talking about it, obviously.
So, but
do you think, without McMahon, do you think Austin would have gotten over as much as he did and still to this day?
No. Not
to that extent.
Who are we going to talk about Austin rest? We're going to talk about Austin and Triple H or Austin.
But I don't think without McMahon, I don't think we would have seen the trilogy of Rock versus Austin, because that was Rocky was his guy. Then Austin was his guy.
But let's keep in mind, Vince McMahon didn't just elevate Austin.
Yeah.
I mean, we had the corporate ministry.
Yeah.
We had his feud Triple H. We had him terrorizing picking at Mankind.
Right.
I mean, McMahon's had his finger in the pie at that time, Bret Hart.
Yeah. Well, after 97, I mean, Bret Hart. Yeah. But do you think it was just a matter of, a lot of people
throw shade on it because it's all Vince just wants to be involved in his company. I'm like, well, no shit. He wants to be involved in his company.
Vince saved his company.
Right, exactly.
And you can't, and you can, anybody that says that cannot rationalize that. Why shouldn't he? Who better? Who better?
Right. Nobody else is going to. Why not?
Because the owner of the company, that owner and all evil authority figure crap has been tried over and over and over and over and over and overdone for years and years and years, and nobody
still
can do it like Vince.
Still to this day.
Nobody could do it like Vince.
Right.
Dixie Carter wanted to be Vince so bad she couldn't stand it, and it never worked.
But now you're starting to see it with Tony Khan and MJF. They're trying to do that shit in AEW. And it's getting over to a certain extent, but it's never – whatever you try to do now
but
will
Tony
never
Khan,
live up to Austin McMahon. Never.
But Tony Khan's got to stay off of camera.
Exactly. He can't –
because every time he gets on camera, he kills it.
Yeah. He does –
He's not – with no disrespect to – not everybody can be on camera.
Yeah.
And it's not his strong suit.
No, it's not.
He does not need to make that mistake. But I think that they're trying to turn a real legitimate backstage problem that became public into turn it into a work that they might be able to generate something. It's not a bad idea.
No, but they got to do it the right way, though. That's a problem.
I don't know that I agree with everything that's happened.
Sure.
And recently you let MJF back in the ring, and the first thing he does is talk about the best con in wrestling works for WWE.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you shouldn't. I'm not against that promo. Sure. I'm against the timing, because your talent's really making you look bad. Now you're gonna let him in the ring to put over your competition that he wants to go to work for.
Right.
So. But I digress.
Yeah.
It's just that Vince McMahon, regardless of what anybody thinks about him, and let me be perfectly clear that he is the bane of my existence as a wrestling fan. Because to me, wrestling today, he took away the wrestling that I liked. So Vince McMahon is forever my wrestling villain, and not in a good way.
Right.
I mean, I like it to mean something. You couldn't even say wrestling around him, so.
Well, you can't.
It's entertainment, pal.
But I recognize and then thoroughly enjoyed what was going on during the Stone Cold Vince McMahon feud. It made you tune into Raw to see what Stone Cold was going to do to him this week.
Well, but that's the thing, and I think that's what they're trying to do with AEW is you don't know what the hell is going to what they're going to do.
That's why I watch AEW, because I don't know what's going to happen each week.
Right, right.
And that's the only reason I still watch it is because they're because I truly believe that Tony Khan books his fandom,
mm-hmm.
and you can clearly see that he was a fan of ECW, and he was a fan of Monday Nitro, because the not knowing what's going to happen from one week to the next is probably the most positive thing I can say about AEW that makes me want to watch it, because you don't know what's coming next.
Well, that's what the ratings are doing so well with. But, so you can see on the screen here, I got technically it at number two, just under Hogan and Savage. Honestly, man, I think it could be number one, but you think so too?
I think it's number one.
You think so? Yeah, because I was just trying to hedge it down. I'm like, but it did so much more for the business than it did.
They were selling out stadiums. Stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
They sold out stadiums during this time with that. There was 6 million people watching.
Right.
6 million. There was more eyeballs on wrestling at this time than ever. And they gone. There ain't 6 million people watching every program combined right now.
Right. I get it. So let's send it up to my promo for my addition to the rivalries this week.
Kurt, just what kind of dilemma is there? I mean, it's real simple. It's real clear to me. You stated that if you didn't win the TNA World title, that you wouldn't wrestle anymore. Kurt, you didn't win the title, so I guess you shouldn't wrestle anymore. I mean, Kurt, I never heard the words come out of your mouth that if you didn't get pinned or if you got screwed. I mean, Kurt, am I hearing that you're out here, of all people, making excuses? I mean, Kurt Angle, the 1996 Olympic gold medalist, the father, the husband, well, the ex-husband. Kurt. I will never, ever, ever forget how you made my life a living hell when I brought you into TNA. And I vowed to myself that one day, I would turn the tide at any cost.
Wait a minute. First of all, you can have that. Now, how did I make your life a living hell? How? Why? By putting TNA on the map, I did that. By talking up TNA every chance I had. By teaching the rookies everything I know. Is that it? Or is it the fact that after I came in, it wasn't all about you anymore? Let me ask you something, Jeff. How many TNA World Heavyweight titles did you win before I came here? A dozen? Two dozen? You held everybody down here in TNA at your own expense. But you couldn't hold down Kurt Angle. Is that what this is about?
Shut your mouth, Kurt. Shut it. That has absolutely nothing to do with it. It has everything to do with taking back what was mine.
All right, so we got Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Angle from the TNA days. Dude, like I said last week when I put Savage and DDP in, I don't think I could have more of a personal rivalry than that one. But I remembered of this one. The out-of-ring feud that they had between, everybody knows it, I don't have to say it again, but I will, is, you know, Jeff Jarrett is married to Karen Jarrett. Kurt Angle's ex-wife. Obviously, they're both of them are in a lot better place today than they were then. My hat's off to them for that. Obviously, to inspiration to a lot of people. But this rivalry, man, holy shit.
It was believable because of the tension.
Right. It was believable because a lot of it was true.
And the internet helped greatly with stirring it. I mean, we've come to find out from Jeff and Kurt both that this was not that. I mean, they weren't, you know, they were on board with working together and having Karen part of it and playing off of that.
You know, and so. it was one of those things too. Listening to ad-free shows, the episode that Paulie just did with Karen, they asked Karen anything, and they were talking about Jeff Jarrett's last match. Compared to him being a part of Ric Flair's. And I was thinking about it. I'm like, okay, why not Kurt? Have Kurt. I obviously, circumstances would have to be perfect. Obviously, Kurt coming off a double knee surgery replacement. Obviously, not now, but Jeff can still fucking go, man. We saw that. You saw it firsthand.
Oh, yeah.
In Nashville.
Jeff Jarrett's as good as any wrestler on television right now.
Oh, by far.
I mean, if you could put Jeff Jarrett... I mean, coming off of Ric Flair's last match, apparently WWE, I don't know what happened there,
Sure.
Because everybody was saying that, hey, I'd have one more run in WWE. But if I was Tony Khan, I'd want the last outlaw
making AEW. A trip.
I would have found a way for the last outlaw to have been a big part of this tournament.
Oh, the AEW, the title tournament?
I mean, or I'd have the last outlaw show up.
Yeah. At least make an appearance, yeah.
I think I don't know that Jeff Jarrett wants to wrestle full time anymore, and I don't know.
I don't think so either. I don't think he has the time to do it, to be honest with you.
I'm saying that he's that good. I want to see it.
Oh, by far.
And Ric Flair's last match, I've always had a good impression. I've always had a good opinion of Jeff Jarrett in the ring.
Sure.
But I'm a Jeff Jarrett fan from World Class.
Yeah, so you don't, yeah.
To me, I have a special place in my heart for the talents that came through Dallas, except for Coco Ware. Screw that guy.
Right, no. Well, I think a lot of people can say that now.
But I'm kidding. I actually want to meet.
I'm not.
But 1985, I wanted to kill him.
But he was good, and he still has that 85 heat.
Yeah, well, he said some horrible stuff to my sister.
Oh, okay.
So, but anyway, but no, I'm back to, I like Jeff Jarrett. But what Jeff Jarrett's done with GCW this year,
mm-hmm.
and what Jeff Jarrett did with Ric Flair's last match, and what I saw Rick and see what I witnessed at Ric Flair's last match backstage with Jeff Jarrett, I was exposed to Jeff Jarrett in a way that you don't see on television. Jeff Jarrett is a genius. And if you ask, I will never give you my Mount Rushmore again that will not include Jeff Jarrett on it. And it's not for just everything that happened in ring.
Right.
I mean, just to see how much of a genius, a wrestling genius that Jeff Jarrett is.
Well, but that it goes to show you, just like you said, all the stuff that he's done in this last year alone. You know, I would even, you know, you had all this PWI top 500. Christ, I would put Jeff Jarrett on that damn list with all the stuff that he's done. He certainly deserves it, but I, you know,
he maybe that's been a little, in there.
Huh?
He should have been in there.
Well, he should have, but obviously he wasn't. But,
the top 500 is, if you're not number one or you're not number 500, then. I mean, it's nice to be recognized. I'm not crapping on it. I'm just saying, if you're number one, you're number one. And if you're number 500, that's your gimmick this year, is I was number 500. And if you didn't make the list, I'd be telling everybody I was number 501.
By far.
That would be my ring entrance. I'd be like, number 501 in PWI's top 500 this year. I mean,
depending on make some money off of it.
Depending on where you're positioned on the card.
Sure.
Don't think I won't suggest that at the next show I'm at next week. Somebody. But Jeff Jarrett, I can't say enough good about him. I love him to death.
A lot of the stuff that he and I go back forth. A lot of people see it on AFS between the Bills and the Titans and all that stuff. I don't want to drop him, but we're talking about him. But anyways, you know, I'll email him every once in a while. Hey, it was nice to talk to you like this when we were in Top Guy weekend and something. But, hey, good to see you. It was great to chat with you for a little bit, or, you know, poke fun. Hey, good luck this weekend against the Bills or whatever. But he's just one of those guys where until you really get behind the scenes with him, you can't really truly appreciate it.
I don't reach out to him that much because I don't like to bother him.
Yeah. Well, I don't either. It would be like maybe once a month if that.
But with hockey season coming, every time the Stars play the Predators.
I didn't even think of that, though, with the Sabres. Well, the Sabres are freaking the drizzling shits. But anyways. But no, looking at this list though, Dave, I got penciled in there at number 11, right under Hogan and Piper.
Yeah, but and you right got it above HBK and Undertaker.
Yeah.
You think it goes below that? And Savage. This was not a feud of the year.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. You think it's right under DDP and Savage?
This was a white hot feud,
mm-hmm.
but this was not a business changer.
Sure.
And that's how I'm looking. That's how I'm looking at the, when we do these,
mm-hmm.
was in my opinion, and I'm not the final say in any of this by any means. So don't think I'm trying to boss hog my way around on this thing.
Right.
But I'm looking at feuds as they were white hot and popped a territory, or they were business changers. Like Austin Vince was a business changer. Hogan Savage was a business changer. Dusty and the Horseman, Dusty and Flair was a business changer.
Mm-hmm.
Magnum and Tully was a white hot issue.
Sure.
DDP and Savage was feud of the year, but right. it was a business changer. To me, DDP and Savage may be too low because that made DDP.
Yeah, that's true.
And 25 years later, DDP is still very relevant.
But do you even think? But if you think about it, to put shed light on the HBK and Undertaker, that main event of WrestleMania. You know what I mean? And you can't say that
more than once.
Yeah. But not, and I don't even think it main evented. It wasn't the main event. It should have, but it didn't. But you can't, and like I said, I put DDP and Savage on there for strictly that, but you can't say the same thing about DDP and Savage. Yes, it did make DDP. But, you know, you're talking about the grandest stage.
I don't think Owen and Brett was as white hot as our Angle and Jarrett.
Sure. And I think that's right where I was going to put it. You know,
Magnum and Tully was white hot.
Oh, by far. Oh, yeah. So we'll put it in there.
And if it would have happened, today.
What's that? Tully and Magnum?
And if that happened today, don't think that the ex-wife wouldn't have been part of the story. Because Magnum's
it would have been the same thing with Jeff and Kurt.
I mean, could you imagine what WWE would have done with Magnum and Tully?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Could you imagine what they do? Can you imagine what they do with Kurt
Tessa,
and Jarrett?
Tessa would have been Dominic before Dominic was Dominic.
Right. Right. But it's one of the things, man. It's interesting to go back and looking at these rivalries back when they're in their heyday and looking and comparing them to today's. And I think that's, like I said,
maybe that'll be the next thing we do, is we'll take an old feud. We'll take an old feud and put and speculate how the modern spin would have been applied to it.
You know, compare it to a modern feud today.
We would have made it a modern feud in today's timeline. How would this feud have been booked?
Yeah.
How outrageous could it have been?
Rebook the feud and now in today's eyes.
Right.
No, that's not a bad idea. But one thing we are going to be doing is what we're going to be doing next week, Dave. We're going to be going over the WCCW from December 28th, 1982. Dallas, Texas, the cage match between Kerry and Rick. We're welcoming in Top Gal Amy to do a little watch along with us. And I actually physically just got a message from Justin. He set his alarm and he slept through it. So
solid.
Well, it makes sense. And he's like,
I'm jealous.
Behind the curtain too much. He's like, yeah, I he's had heart issues sleeping all this week. I'm like, well, I can't say the same thing. I slept like a freaking baby all week. But anyways, Justin will be back next week, and we'll be welcoming in Amy as well. So we're definitely looking forward to that as well. She definitely will put another spin on this feud as well. It'll be interesting to see her view on it.
She appreciates the old stuff.
She does. And that's, we brought it up last week. I'm very happy that you guys suggested that, because that was definitely something that I was trying to figure out a way to welcome her back in as well, too. And I think this is going to be the perfect way to do that.
And if everybody thinks I talked too much this week, I apologize. I was just trying to make up for Justin.
And I was softballing that to you too, Dave. And it's just like, after last week, I wanted to make sure you're okay and you didn't have any machete marks on your body. And, you know, the geese didn't peck at you. And, you know,
Justin just didn't want to face me because he's going to play the Cowboys today without Dak Prescott. So losing to the Cowboys without Dak Prescott is going to be very embarrassing.
Well, and I'm sure we'll definitely
We'll definitely post something on that. We got Dave's Cowboys taking on Justin's Bengals this week, and then we got my Bills taking on Frank Bruno and Jeff Jarrett's Titans on Monday night.
Go Bills!
Yeah, amen to that. Which I was surprised, Dave. I just realized. Let me
explain. The Tennessee Titans will always be the Houston Oilers to me.
Oh, I get that. Yeah,
and I hated the Oilers as a little kid.
Yeah. But no, it'll be an interesting concept. There's two games tomorrow night. I didn't realize that the Bills are playing at 7 Eastern, and they got the another game after that at 8. I'm like, well, what the hell? I'm like, well, and I didn't realize that because I record with Brian tomorrow night. I'm like, oh crap, I got to be mobile so I can watch the game and record at the same time.
Man, I can't say enough good about Brian Hebner.
Oh no,
I'm so privileged to get to work with him. I was so embarrassed because I didn't have my stripes. Right. We're going to Chicago. I didn't pack a lot.
Yeah.
Because we were told for the showcase that we were going to wear black shirts and gold bow ties. So mm-hmm. I brought a black shirt. There was no point in bringing stripes. And the way Josh Chernoff is about ties, I mean, I knew we were 100% going to wear black shirts and gold bow ties. So I got there. And like, we're not doing the black shirts. You bring your stripes? Nope. And I know better. Been doing this long enough that you bring your gear all the time, just sure. in case. But I was so embarrassed, and then I just didn't. So, I mean, I would have been embarrassed anyway, but especially in front of Kyoto and Hebner, I was.
Well, it worked out. It worked out for the best, you guys.
Lesson learned. But man, Brian Hebner. This is only my second time. Actually, well, I don't count Black Label and GCW because, I mean, I knew where the hard cam was. But this is about me. This is my first year experiencing television wrestling.
Sure.
So I had some questions, and Brian was very, very helpful, you know.
Yeah. He's a good guy to bounce it. Yeah, he's a good guy. Bounce ideas off of.
He was very helpful. Him and Kyoto both. I feel like I came out. You get better working with better people.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's for sure.
I'm 17 years in. I'm still learning every time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm open to learn something. Every time I show up at a show, I'm open to learn something new.
No doubt. No doubt. But with that being said, guys, thank you so much for tuning in this week. Make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @RingsideRant. Dave is Ref Super Dave PWD. Tune in next week. We're definitely going to be another episode to keep your eyes out on when we welcome in Top Gal Amy. So thank you. And a watch along. Exactly. So we'll be watching that match with Rick and Kerry inside the cage. Dave, you got anything else before we close shop?
Just, you know, next week, watch this episode, participate in the watch along. It's a fun match to watch. It's white hot. It's etched in my mind all these years later. It's probably top three thing that made an impression on me as a fan. I still remember when it happened. I still remember how I felt. I still remember how the crowd reacted around me. I mean, this was a moment, and it launched it. It was the shot heard around the world. I'm excited that we're going to get to watch it, and I'm excited Amy's going to be watching it with us, and hopefully you'll watch it with us too, and having a really good time reliving my childhood. And it's fun to go back and look at it with old man eyes too, and picking up some things that I had no idea before.
Sure. Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in this week. We'll see you right here next week on the Ringside Rant.